This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Jimmy Johnson joins us on Sports Byline. Of course, drives the number 48 Lowe's Chevrolet for Hendrick Motorsports and the only driver in NASCAR history to win five straight championships. Jimmy, I know at some point you've had a chance to kind of reflect on what you've accomplished, not only in NASCAR since you started driving back in 2002, but over the last couple of seasons as well. What do you think has been the catalyst to your success?
My opinion, it's all about people. We have a great race team, obviously, and equipment's there. The sponsorship is there through Lowe's and Chevy and Cobalt Tools and all the folks that are on the race car. So we have all the ingredients, but it's really the people that make the difference. And our team has been together for a long time, and we're just a good group together. It's hard to argue about that.
You know, what I find surprising is usually there's a learning curve when somebody steps up. I mean, if you go from college to the National Football League, there's going to be a learning curve. But you have not had that kind of learning curve. I mean, you've never been out of the top five in points since you joined the Sprint Cars Cup Series. Does that surprise you?
Well, in my eyes, I mean, I know to the world I came on the scene in 02, and we haven't finished worse than fifth, but you know, I was 26 when I came into the sport. I had a few years in Nationwide beforehand and ASA and then my off-road days. So I've been racing since I was five, and there were a lot of years in there where things didn't work out. I made my own mistakes, had other issues, maybe not the right environment, you know, just a lot of stuff going on. I mean, I've had just about every hard luck situation happen to me over the years. But once I got connected with Hendrick Motorsports, those issues really subsided. And I was matured. I had matured enough as a driver to take advantage of my opportunity. And I look at guys coming in at 18, 19 years old to Cup, and I respect and appreciate their talent. But, man, I couldn't see myself having the success I am today at 18 or 19. It takes a while to mature and to be ready for this type of role.
One of the things that surprised me is that you've had so much success, and with success comes notoriety, and with notoriety comes demand. And I remember thinking about Michael Jordan and how he was able to departmentalize what he did on the basketball court and then the demands off the court. How have you been able to do that?
You really just learn as you go. There isn't a book for athletes coming along. It doesn't matter if it's basketball, baseball, football. You know, you look at what we have here in NASCAR. You just kind of learn through trial and error. And there's no really right way to go about it, but man, you go from racing and competing at a local level and thrusting right into this massive situation as a cup driver, and a lot comes with it, and you just learn as you go. And it's really all you can do along the way, and I have certainly been able to make those little compartments myself and find that, you know, I go to the track, it's time to work. You know, at the track there's different responsibilities, and break off into that mindset. At home, I can relax and let go and be myself and charge my battery in a weird way, and then come back to the track and focus again.
Knowing the demands on you and all the drivers of the NASCAR circuit, is it hard to say no because of the time you have to give to sponsors as well as to the fans as well?
It is a tough balance. I've had a ton of success, very fortunate for it. But with that comes a lot of demands, and it's tough saying no, and that's been one of the hardest things I've had to develop along the way, is learning how to say no. And it doesn't feel good. I mean, it's tough to not sign that autograph or to not do something for a sponsor. But there are just times where I can't do it, and I've got to go on and do my job and stay focused on the job at hand.
John McEnroe said to me that after he had a child, he said it really kind of changed for him on the tennis court, Jimmy. He said that I used to think of nothing but tennis. He said occasionally after I had a child, I'd think about, well, my child's got a cold. We've got to travel here and travel there. I point that up because, of course, Genevieve has just come into your life as your baby as well. Do you notice anything different in your thinking as compared before you had a child?
Yeah, there's no doubt that having a child changes the way you look at life and the way life works. I have absolutely enjoyed the experience. My wife and I have had an amazing time with it, but it's different. And we keep talking about our new normal that's developing. The normal that we knew before, I don't think that'll ever exist again now. So we're trying to find that new normal. I have great support from my wife, my team, and they give me the time and space to be at home and do the family stuff. But at the same time, you know, I show up on Thursdays and get to work and do my job. So as of right now, it's all going really, really well.
I was talking to Michael Waltrip the other day, and he was talking about his book, and he talked very, of course, lovingly about Dale Earnhardt and what he meant to him and how he kind of brought him along during a difficult time. And in your particular case, there was another California guy that I know pretty well, Jeff Gordon. Can you talk a little bit about how he came into your life and what he brought to you?
Yeah, I mean, Jeff really spotted me through you know, some talks with Ricky Hendrick and then Rick Hendrick. I wasn't aware that he or his you know, or the Hendrick group were interested in me. And, you know, the story goes where I went to Jeff and asked for some advice, and long and behold, he had an opportunity. So, you know, it was a wild experience, and he's helped me on so many levels with just understanding our sport, the demands that exist within the sport from fan base and fan clubs, you know, the different events that take place, sponsorship responsibilities, the balance with the shop. He's been a great mentor for me over the years and has helped me a lot, especially in those early years coming in.
When you climb into the car for a race, the number 48 Lowe's Chevrolet, I'm just wondering, how long does it take you to know what kind of car you're going to have underneath you in that race, Jimmy?
You know, race practice, you can make probably, if it's really bad, you know, within a couple corners. You know, there are trends with our cars that they're never going to be perfect. If you make them perfect on new tires, they're going to be terrible when the fuel burns off and you get on old tires. So you have to compromise. And so that, with that in mind, it may take you 5 or 8 laps in race trim to know what you have and how good it's going to be. But, there's some days where you make one corner and you're like, this just isn't working.
I'm going to make a layman's observation here. Correct me if you think I'm wrong on this, but I really think that part of your success, and I say your success, but the team's success as well, is adaptability. And what I mean by that is NASCAR is always changing the rules to try to even things out. The tracks are changing, the weather is changing, and the team that is able to be adaptable best is the one that's going to have the most success. Am I correct in that observation?
Yeah, I find that to be a true statement. I definitely agree.
Yeah. And what is it that a team has to do in order to be adaptable?
Really, I think it boils down to communication. Again, NASCAR has so many regulations that the teams are much closer than you could ever imagine. And it's the communication between the driver and the crew chief, and then really the crew chief and his engineering staff to find speed. And in today's world, we're finding a half a tenth. A tenth is a huge amount, a tenth of a second, that is. So the small little gains that you can make through communication really separate teams these days.
You know, I was watching the Real Sports piece about you, and it was an interview with your crew chief as well, and he said that you guys have been in step since the very beginning, and I found that kind of unusual because usually there's a feeling out period. What is it that you guys do best between each other?
We didn't meet prior to you know, this working experience together. And from day one, as you said, we went to this lunch, met, ate some lunch. Some Hendrick folks were there. Obviously, we were there. And before we knew it, Chad and I got off on a side topic about motorcycle racing and shot the bull for forever. And at that point, we had 3 guys in mind. And the other 2 conversations went well, but there just wasn't that easy-flowing conversation that took place. And with Chad and I mean, the Hendrick folks that were there had to break up the lunch meeting because it had run so long. They all had to get back to work that, you know, they broke it up and we left there, and it's like, yeah, that's our guy. So off we went.
I really couldn't believe that motorcycle you got when you were 4 years old. How did your feet ever touch the ground on that, Jimmy?
I'm not sure they did. But my dad, we have some great footage of him chasing me in the sand as I'm trying to ride off. And I'm not sure I can really touch, but I could go straight. When I had to turn around, that was when the problems came up.
Yeah, a final question. I noticed also that you did a lot of off-road racing in the early part of your career, and I've always heard drivers tell me that off-road racing is the fun racing. What is it that makes that so unique?
Well, it's kind of three-dimensional in a way. I mean, asphalt oval racing, if you will, is two-dimensional. You're sliding and accelerating and all that. You know, there's a lot of cool sensations. But when you add jumping into that lineup of things, it's a whole new world at that point. It's just cool to be in a vehicle airborne and planning on landing in a certain spot, and the technique of launching off of jumps and how to position the vehicle in the air. It's just a whole different world.
I know you want to send a shout-out to the servicemen and servicewomen that catch the show each night, especially over in Iraq and Afghanistan. I know how much it means to them to be able to hear from people like Jimmy Johnson. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah, without a doubt. Thank you for the opportunity to say something. I just can't thank the men and women enough for their dedication and commitment to keeping our country free and protecting us. We think of you daily. I think our sport does a great job in our pre-race ceremonies, honoring the men and women serving the country. We cannot thank you enough and look forward to doing more in the future and hope to see some of you here at the racetrack. We have a great pleasure each week to meet a lot of different men and women from the armed forces. So I hope I run into one of you very soon, and thank you once again.
Jimmy, I want to thank you for your time. I know you're quite busy, but you've been very gracious to me over the years. Thanks a lot, Jimmy.
You got it. Thank you.
Jimmy Johnson, driving the number 48 Lowe's Chevrolet for Hendrix Motorsports, one of the truly great drivers ever on the NASCAR circuit. We continue on Sports Byline.